Hi, my name is Michael Creamer and welcome to a Cushman & Wakefield video and podcast focused on the world of real estate and everything that touches it. C&W's global total workplace team and research think tank have been leading business thinking before and through the pandemic with a focus on the role of the office. Early in 2021, they published Workplace Ecosystems of the Future, which was based on our experience per square foot data, as well as the team's experience working with clients globally. Their most recent research, entitled Office of the Future Revisited, has led to a set of what they are calling the new realities. Realities that are shaping hybrid work strategies and which will allow companies and employees to deliver their best work. So I'm thrilled today to be talking to Despina Katsakakis, who is Global Head of Total Workplace, and David Smith, Global Head of Occupier Insight, who will outline the findings of the latest research at the macro level. And I'm also talking to Antonio Cardone, Nicola Gillen, and Carol Wong, responsible for Total Workplace respectively in North America, Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Asia Pacific. You're all very welcome to the podcast, and let's kick it off. David, the first reality of the report is that office demand is recovering. I think for a lot of people, they might find this slightly puzzling. I guess the first question is this true?
Well, Michael, it's a great question. The data shows that it is true. What we're seeing with our preliminary 2022 Q1 numbers is that leasing activity is actually up just shy of 40% across the globe. It's about 41% in the United States. So there is a growing demand. And in fact, if we look at net absorption, while it's been negative here in the U.S., and in about half the markets in Europe, the other half of Europe have seen positive absorption in 2021, and most of Asia has seen positive absorption during that time. So there is demand for space, and it is accelerating.
So maybe you could dig into that a little bit for us and tell us what you see as the underlying causes for that.
Yeah, I think there are two big ones. One is we're in the midst of a booming job market. We actually have more office workers around the world today than we did at the beginning or right before the pandemic occurred. And so there's across the 10 largest economies, there are 2.7 million more office workers today than there were at the beginning of 2020. So even if we take pretty generous reductions in how much space those people need because they're more agile than they might have been in 2019, that's over 300 million square feet of office space needed to house all of these people. So the job growth is a big part of that. And office sectors, number two, are really taking a disproportionate part of job growth right now and moving forward. So sectors like the tech sector, which has made up about a fifth of U.S. Leasing activity during the pandemic. You have financial services as well. And then, life sciences and healthcare are growing sectors, which obviously create demand for lab space and for medical office space. But additionally, they're taking on a greater share of office demand. Before the pandemic, it was accounting for about 9% of space, and now it's 13% of space being leased.
So, David, I understand the increase in employment driving office demand space, but are there any other factors that are meaning that people are moving buildings or taking newer space?
Well, we're definitely seeing a flight to quality, which is at least partially what we typically see after recessions. So after the last two recessions, once absorption turned positive, about 80% of that was happening in Class A buildings. But it seems to be happening to maybe a greater degree as companies think about agile workforces, the quality of the building and the services in that building become more important, not less important. And so as an example, the last two quarters, we've seen about 60% of U.S. leasing activity has been in Class A buildings. So occupiers are very focused on getting into high quality space, and they're very focused on getting into sustainable space, as that's a bigger part of their corporate mandate. And so we've seen vacancy rates drop in LEED and other ESG buildings at a much greater degree, even as vacancy is increasing overall.
Great. And I think I was thinking that it was a lot to do with ESG. So both from a landlord point of view, if they're renovating buildings, they've got to be that very high quality LEED or in our case, BREEAM, as well as obviously new buildings built to that new spec almost with ESG as the center point. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right, because both corporations are really focused, obviously, on their carbon footprints, and their built space is a huge part of that. But they're also really focused on the wellness and health of their employees. And so they want space with good air ventilation, good access to greenery, good lighting, all those sort of things have become more and more important.
Okay, great. Despina, if I can flick it over to you. One of the second reality that you talk about in this report is what we mean by hybrid. So can you maybe dig into that a little bit for us?
I think, Michael, the second thing we're seeing is that hybrid is definitely here to stay. And as workplaces shift towards more agility, leaders and employees will need to shift their mindsets from my desk is where I work to I can work anywhere that supports my functionality, convenience, and well-being. Having choice, work-life balance, and flexibility are expected by the majority. But employees also yearn for a greater sense of belonging and community, which is what we've all really missed over the past couple of years. So finding that sweet spot between hybrid work and strong inclusion will make organizations a more attractive place to work. However, this requires that leaders at all levels tap more deeply into their employees' preferences, needs, and expectations. This isn't an easy undertaking. We need to listen and to change behaviors and to think of flexibility not as an endpoint, but actually as a set of evolving expectations with regular adjustments down to the level of individual employees. So in order to do that, it is important to collect employee feedback regularly as part of an agile approach to evolving hybrid working practices. Our global experience per square foot data consistently shows us that choice is paramount, and organizations that use mandates will be at a disadvantage, as employees with choice and control over where they work consistently perform better. Many employees are rating their in-office experiences higher. In fact, ironically, health and well-being actually improves. And the workers that have the most meaningful workplace experiences are the ones who tend to come to the office multiple days a week, but actually have the choice to do so. It is also important to note that expectations differ, and a higher percentage of executive leaders have indicated that they're more likely to return to the office full time compared to individual contributors who actually prefer more remote options. So to succeed, organizations need to close the expectation gap between leadership and employees related to hybrid working and to reassess the purpose of the office.
I guess the third reality of the report is worth digging into as well, because you talk about the role of the office has changed, your culture, collaboration, and creativity or innovation really now being the cornerstone of the office, so to say. That's why people go to an office. Can you elaborate on those a little bit more?
So culture, collaboration, and innovation will define the purpose of the office. Employees need the office to support their desire to learn, to make meaningful cultural connections to their organizations, and to engage more deeply with their colleagues. As such, there's not one standard for the future of the office. Each organization's real estate portfolio offers unique opportunities. What's required is to comprehensively review not only the physical characteristics and functionality, but also the utilization of the space and the impact that it has on employee experience. In order to determine in each of the various locations which spaces to keep, which to shed, and which to adapt to support a more agile workforce. In order to do that, of course, it is important to have data to know how to invest in what matters most. to compete for talent in today's environment where one out of five people prefer to never be in the office, corporate leaders will need to create office environments that embody corporate culture. They make an emotional connection and inspire employees to come to the office. So designing an optimal hybrid solution is a complex business challenge, and it requires an integrated approach from real estate, from human resources, finance, comms, and technology leadership. No longer can these departments work independently. Rather, they need to work cooperatively as the organization redefines how to bring to life its brand and culture and policies that really connect with their employees' needs. As such, change management becomes critical because it will assist with changing leadership mindsets, work processes, physical space and locations, and create the right communication and integration to make the right impact over time.
Great. Thank you for that. And thanks, Jaspina. Maybe now if we flip it to the regional discussion and start with you, Nicola. So Nicola Gillen runs Total Workplace EMEA. Where I wanted to start was whether there was any difference between what the big multinational companies are doing and maybe local or regional players are doing. And is the data telling us anything in that regard?
It is, yes. And broadly speaking, the disruptors that are changing how and where we work are impacting everybody everywhere. These are things like digital transformation. Work is more digital than it's ever been before, so we can do it from anywhere. And generational shifts, and we see that across cultures. These changes are, however, being adopted at different rates in different countries. And we see a push-pull driver between corporate objectives at a global level and individual preferences, which are influenced by local country context. So this rate of adoption is impacted by local culture, the infrastructure of the cities people are working and living in, employment regulations, living and working patterns, and these vary quite a bit across regions. But we're also seeing a positive impact in terms of regional cities and regional high streets, where people are getting out of their homes if they're working from home and using their local amenities, their local high streets more. So hopefully what we'll start to see is a rebalancing of employment and amenity distribution and wealth distribution from global cities and across into regional cities. But our data also shows that we do not see any decline in global cities because they will always have a huge draw and appeal in terms of cultural, educational, amenity hubs, and particularly, again, for younger generations.
One of the things that David mentioned was the flight to quality. So does that hold true across Europe, or are you seeing any differences between countries?
Yeah, very much so. So we know that many of our corporate occupier clients, you know, had too much real estate before COVID. They are looking to consolidate into their best locations and their best buildings. And one point we've been making quite a bit is that things that may have been considered nice to have before COVID, like well-being programs, strong ESG certifications on buildings, are really now becoming employee expectations for the future. So really, we're not seeing buildings coming out of the ground now that do not have a very strong sustainability certification. That's really seen as a base requirement. So certainly, the flight to quality is something we're seeing particularly across cities.
And the other thing I just wanted to ask about, one of the points that Jaspina made was to do with younger people wanting to come into the office around the learning in particular and the mentoring. Is that, again, are we seeing variations to that in Europe? And how do you think about offices in terms of whether you're designing them for the younger people wanting to do that or older people who might want to stay at home? Is that a trend that's coming across?
I think for everybody, they're physically coming to the office with the intention of meeting other people. So I think the office is very much shifting towards collaborative learning and social activities for everybody. While we see an uptick in terms of Thursdays and Fridays from a social point of view with younger generations where they roll on and there is a social life outside and around work, there is equally a need for the older generations to come into the office to, you know, communicate, help train, mentor the younger generations. So their presence in the office is equally important. But we do see a big shift in terms of stage in life, where those in the middle who have other responsibilities, such as, you know, kids, pickups, drop-offs, all of that sort of thing, they are pushing more for flexible working patterns. So actually, we could see a situation where the dominant users of offices are the younger and the older people in the workforce, which there's a nice sort of harmony there between the experienced people and the younger people looking for that experience coming into the office to meet.
Interesting. Okay. Maybe now we can turn it over to Asia-Pac and to you, Carol. Let me start with the same question that I asked Nicola. Are you seeing differences across APAC between, let's call it, local companies or sub-regional companies and then the global ones?
Of course. I think APAC is geographically large and culturally diverse region. And within this, we see occupiers adopting variety of strategies, such as a multinationals adopting a plug and play. For example, an engineering company that we work in Singapore simplified the overall process by applying global strategy directly locally. And others take a more local approach, where extensive studies and workshops are included to really understand the difference of the nuances, the local needs, employees' challenges, and redefine the roles and the purpose of the office. Despite a different approach, there are similarity that we see actually is around cost. The occupiers in APAC are fundamentally key challenges are still cost, and a lot of real estate decisions are highly aligned with this business strategies challenges that we see.
And I have to ask you about Australia, always the sort of leading light when it comes to workplace strategy, let's say, particularly pre-pandemic. So what's been happening there, and how has the Australian business community reacted to all these changes?
I think Australia is very much aligned with the global trend, whereby the adoption of the hybrid working is high. Australians' employees are definitely more inclined to work from the office on 2 to 3 days per week, whereby taking the rest of the time remotely and with flexibility. Employers definitely have also taken action to establish an ecosystem of workplace so that they provide employees with a variety of choices. For example, since pandemic till now, NEP has been reviewing their existing premises to realign space typology to better support different activities and also repurpose their retail branches offices to allow employees to live nearby to work from. So I think overall they are adopting really well, and the adoptions of a hybrid working will continue as become part of their BAU practices.
Which other countries in Asia-Pac would you call out? We obviously can't, we're not going to talk about all of them, but I mean, they are so different. I mean, if you take Japan for an example, I know that their working practices have always been about presenteeism and long commutes and so on. Is that breaking down at all?
Personally, I'm amazed by the adoptions of hybrid working in Japan. Our extensive study shows 64% of Japanese employees want to increase remote working as tremendous time saved on commute, allowing them to find more work-life balance and more focused work time. In our report, we share the work that we've done with a pharmaceutical company last year to reduce 50% of their footprint with the implementation of a robust hybrid work arrangement. The remaining workplace has realigned to increase 50% collaborations to facilitate more physical collaborations with the holistic change management program. The employees' adoptions of the new hybrid workings are fascinated as well, given that, you know, with the high engagement that we see. However, we also see, on the contrary, that the local companies are also starting to actually adopting hybrid, but at a very slower pace. We do see that they, you know, they're still looking at least 3 to 4 days in the office that we see moving forward. I think India is not so much of different, but the thing we see that is fundamentally different in India is that the organizations are definitely eager to return to work quickly, especially for the banking and financial sectors. And you know, all the local companies are almost 100% back to the office. However, in the technology sectors whereby the war of talent is so high, we do see the technology companies are providing, you know, flexibilities, choices for their employees as part of the talent attractions and retention strategies. So we do see that the technology sectors are taking a phased approach, whereby the first phase is for people near live in the cities to come back to the office first. And the second phase is slowly for the employees who are live outskirts or in the tier two or tier three cities to slowly move back to the city itself. This, you know, this is definitely in progress as we see that the Bengaluru residential's rental has spiked 30 to 40% over the last few months as people, as employees are coming back to the key cities.
So Nicola talked about the large European cities and referenced London, and obviously Paris is one where there's very good infrastructure for getting around and what's happening with suburban commute. What's happening in China?
China, I mean, we know that the pandemic has the least impact in the way they're working in China. And over the last 12 months, we do see that the MNCs is moving away from traditional settings into ABW, the activity-based working, with a very conservative ratio still. You know, the culture of presenteeism is still very strong and trust is still low. So we do, you know, we still see people are returning to the office at a 100% mode as well. One thing that, you know, we see that we have supported FMCG companies on their workplace transformation journey while supporting high growth within the same footprint. But in the project, you know, there has a tremendous need to redefine the new purpose of the office and the desired user experience so that right size, right space, amenities, technology, and services are put together to inspire employees to reach their full potentials. It's an almost 18 months long project that we have implemented a data-led approach to define the strategies and most importantly, a seamless and engaging change programs to help the employees to transition into the new way of working. But again, you know, we still see the adoptions is very slowly moving from the traditional space itself.
So I'm now going to ask you the impossible question, which is how would you summarize what's going on in Asia-Pac? Because it seems to me it's different everywhere, and it's probably different within countries. But is that fair, or how would you describe what you see across the different parts of the region?
I think APAC is definitely, you know, working towards the hybrid. The reality of hybrid is here to stay, but the speed really varies by countries, cultures, and companies. Most of us are still testing, learning, and please do not expect it to be a quantum shift for us, but a journey of transformations because some of us are just starting at the very traditional Gen 1 status. So it will be a long process for us, a longer process for us in APAC.
Fascinating and interesting, but also more complicated, I guess. If we now switch to North America and to you, Antonio, obviously you're one country in North America, or two, I guess, Canada and the US, but are you seeing regional variations or variations by state between what's going on with hybrid?
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, while there are many significant differences across the US regions, you know, socioeconomic, geopolitical differences, and certainly vaccination and case rate differences across the country, we're not seeing differences in response to the current workplace challenges by region. We see all scenarios and all solutions being explored in all regions. But the major difference we are seeing by region is the pace of people returning to the office. While across the country, people are definitely out and about at sporting events. It is the season of music festivals here. People are dining indoors and out. Travel and flights are nearly back to pre-pandemic levels. So life is clearly going on, but office attendance is not. And cities are not back to full vibrancy, especially in the CBDs and financial districts of our large cities. The rate of returning to the office is different across the regions, as I said, ranging from sort of 30 to 60% of people back in the office across the country. Interestingly, aligned with some of the comments that Nicola made about driving to the office, Texas is really pushing up the higher numbers of attendance, with the West Coast and major East Coast metros in that lower range. This is related to things like public transit safety uncertainties. Just recently, we've seen some issues with the with security and safety on the metro in New York City. Long commute times, certainly in many large cities, and really a reluctance to spend time on the road rather than at the desk at home where people are both productive, comfortable, and safe.
It makes me to think about the difference between sectors, because a lot of what gets reported is obviously the tech sector, life sciences. So are you seeing differences in the data between different sectors when it comes to back to the office and use of hybrid?
Yes, yeah, that's really where we are seeing the difference in the US across sectors. And so if we start with, as you introduced there, the idea of the tech sector, they're certainly leading with this idea of flexibility and choice, the working from anywhere or remote first as a solution. Interestingly, we've seen those organized tech sector organizations with the resources to invest are in the process of completing some really significant and major new buildings that were planned prior to the pandemic. So while they continued construction as best as they're able to during the pandemic, they made changes to the workplace so that we're now seeing really the first experiments in the new workplace designed to address the needs of the hybrid worker. Reservation systems broadly applied with those organizations who are choosing to go that way, and definitely an emphasis on gathering spaces where people meet together and connect and work with each other. Even though our experience per square foot data tells us that in the tech sector in the Americas, we're looking at about 41% of folks wanting to either be in the office or be hybrid versus some 59% of people wanting to be remote employees. We're also seeing here in the tech sector a greater commitment to increasing the experience of the workforce, the positive experience of the workforce when they are actually in the office. So we have clients that are really placing emphasis on expanding their internal teams to support events in the office, to inspire return, and this whole idea of the on-site, off-site. You know, we used to have off-site meetings that took us away from the office, now looking at on-sites to bring us into the office, and really underpinning that positive experience when people are in the office, organizing staff to help curate that experience for people who only come in occasionally. This is a really major emphasis now. How can we improve that seamlessness, the ease of conducting great meetings together, having choices in food when we come, catering, event support, such that it's a really great experience if we're only coming something like once a month, et cetera, for a team meeting.
You know, what you've talked about, I believe is universal. And by that, I mean that it doesn't matter which sector you're in, the need to get people into the office for a different experience based on what the data is telling us, which is what Despina was talking about, this idea of collaboration and innovation and culture. Are you seeing that in other sectors? Obviously, life sciences is a big booming sector globally, and particularly in the US and certain key markets. Is it a similar need for them?
Yeah, the high growth life sciences sector, we're seeing really a strong demand for staff to be in the office because of their working relationship with the lab. The lab and the office really being together, not separate spaces, and certainly not in separate buildings or in separate sites. So a very strong preference for those functions to be together in the same building.
Thank you for that. I think it's perhaps opportune now to wrap this up. We will link all the reports that we've mentioned to this podcast. So people want to follow up on any of the data, they'll be able to find it there. I think it just leaves me to try and wrap it up by saying, I mean, clearly all the information and all the comments that have been made are about choice and about thinking about what the employees need and want so that they can work well from home as well as the office, as well as somewhere else. And there's real emphasis on using data to try and drive the right decisions. And I guess above all the way back to what Despina was talking about at the beginning, the idea that we need to iterate and think about what's going to work and try it out and then move on. So with that, I'd just like to thank everyone for joining me. Really appreciate your comments and speak to you all soon.